You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 128 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you, of course, by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin, and I am joined by the Bowling Alley King himself, Van Lee.
What's up, Van? Yes, why thank you. I am King, Mayor, Councilman, you name it, of Bowling Alley. And the reason I say that is because I work at a place called Fun City, so I like to go with, like, you know, city municipality titles. So people ask, oh, what do you do at Fun City? I'm the mayor.
That works. I just totally made that up off the cuff, the Bowling King, by the way. But the Bowling Mayor, I think, sounds pretty good. You could be on, like, Strike Lane. You could live there.
Yeah, very nice, clever. I think Bowling King, by the way, is like a brand of, I don't know, like bowling shoe or bowling ball, something like that. Also, did you know that some bowling balls smell? This is legit. I'm put on my serious hat, and I mean smell good.
Okay, hold on. We're going to bring on Ron Rigney here. Ron, what do you think bowling balls smell like?
I've been told sometimes that certain balls smell, so that's something I was aware of. Now, do you mean that they smell like you order them in a certain fragrance? Like you can get them that they smell like popcorn or
yes.
flowers? Or are they just like stink like a bowling alley?
No, they're scented. So oh. I'm not going to go through the whole spiel because I will bore everyone to death. But there's a lot involved with a bowling ball, and particularly physics and drilling and so forth. But basically, when they pour what's called the cover stock, which is the part of the ball you see, the outside part, there's one company called Storm who puts in a fragrance for each of their bowling balls. Now, each different bowling ball has its own fragrance. So, and I mean that like in that series. Like there's a bowling ball called the Agent or whatever it may be, or the Meteor, whatever stupid Ooh. BS names they come up with, like
the Agent.
You know, Oathbreaker, whatever it may be. And anyway, so the Oath, all of the Oath,
the Widowmaker,
they all will smell like peppermint or whatever it may be. So yes, in fact, that's a great line to use if you're
like
trying
my
to hit
favorite
on a
stripper.
Yeah.
So you're essentially saying there's a lot of ball sniffing going on at Fun City.
So many people have sniffed my balls. It's just hard to count.
And hence is why you are the mayor of Fun City.
That's right. And they smell delightful.
Oh no.
One smells like a Tootsie Roll Pop.
Just one?
Just the one.
Okay.
And they're shiny.
Could you potentially choose what, like, if I wanted my bowling ball to be bacon scented, would that be okay?
Not really. You would have to find a bowling ball that has that scent. So, like, again, Oathbreaker or Widowmaker, that bowling ball, all of that bowling ball smells like peppermint or wherever it may be. So, you'd have to find a specific model, I guess I would say, of bowling ball that you want the scent to be. You can't pick this model and choose the smell. Every of that model comes with that smell.
So you couldn't just stuff a bunch of bacon like in the finger holes and hope it smells like bacon.
I'm not saying you can't. That's what I'll say to
that. You could, but not the same thing. Okay,
sure.
That's the key, is to have the bacon in the holes. And then you get a little bit of grease to get the right amount of spin on it.
Nice and slick. Yeah, and the best part is, at the end of the night, your hands smell great.
Exactly. You got to fight the dogs off, or they'll eat your fingers right off your hand, though. I tell you what you should do, though. Instead of focusing on the smell, you should get the you need to get a look of the ball, a design on there, so that when it spins, you know, you got that fancy curve, that it spins in such a way that it's like one of those hypnotizing side-to-side clocks, you know, that and then you can just hypnotize everybody who's watching, and you can just wake them up, like, with the snap of a finger. As soon as you're done, be like, I bowled a 300. It was perfect. I can't believe you guys don't remember it.
How many 300s do you think I've bowled?
Well, if you have that ball, it would be like infinity.
Seriously, how many would you guess that I? You don't know anything about my quote bowling career. How many would you guess that I bowled?
I think you bowled two. I say two.
I know from listening to your old podcast that you used to be back in your day quite the bowler. So I'm gonna say one.
It's like six plus. I don't know. And here's the funny thing. People get mad about that because they're like, how many 300s do you have? I go, I don't know. I lost count. I don't care. Because I don't care, because I'm not going to go on a whole diatribe here. But bowling is not what it used to be. They made it too easy. So basically anybody can. There are more 300s now than there ever have been, and it's just too simple. I get it for the industry, but it's crazy. No one wants to hear this, by the way, so why don't we move on to baseball?
Well, this is like, this sounds like the fly ball revolution. This is a juice ball debate, but in bowling.
It kind of is, to be honest. It's lane conditions, it's bowling equipment. All of it have basically caused this inflated score time. Like when I bowled, which was 10 years ago at best, like my final average, which was really good in my last league that I bowled, was 219. Now 219 is not even that great. People average 230, 240 all the time, and that's stupid. That's absurd. That's like the equivalent of seeing, you know, 15 to 20 perfect games in baseball a year. It's just too much.
Wow.
I think I bowled a 240 on Wii bowling once.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I was
going to say, this whole diatribe by Van is a slap in the face to me, because my highest score in real life is like a 165 or something like that.
Yeah,
I've never been miraculous. You'll get there.
No, I won't. I'm not a good bowler. It hurts my arm every time I bowl.
Need a smelly
anyway,
ball.
I definitely need to get smelly balls. That is the key. Before we get into anything else, we need to plug some other crap that we just did. I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but we're already lubed up. Like most of the time, we just hop on Skype here. We just roll into the show cold. But man, I'm warm right now. We already did a podcast before this one. It is the brand new Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, which is airing specifically on the fancy new Fantrax Radio. So if you play on any leagues on Fantrax, click on over there and listen to us talk while you're setting your lineups. It's a good time. And so that's fun. I just realized on another show we totally forgot to plug like the stuff that we write, but you know what? We'll get better.
We will. It's a new venture. Yeah. I feel like we've built up a pretty good rapport here at the Nasty Cast that it's going to come much easier on the other one for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, except for Ron, he's kind of a douchebag, but
yeah. What do you mean kind of?
Indeed. I need to talk to you guys about a Twitter account for that show after this, but remind me about that later.
Like Instagram baseball account, that sounds horrible.
Oh boy. You know what? Everything that's coming to my mind right now is not podcast appropriate, so I'm just going to move on. tweet us your Instagram handle. Yes, move on. Tweet us Movon's Twitter handle at NastyCastBGFS. You can also find me, like I said, at Nathan Dawkins. Van is at Manly Vanley, and of course Ron is at The Real Made, M-A-D-A-Y. And of course, if you want to check out our written work, go to BigGuyFantasySports.com, and you can also find Bob's consistency guide for 2017. Go check that out, and of course use the coupon code NASTYCAST to get $1 off of that big bad boy. Football season is coming. And, of course, rate and review the podcast if you enjoy the show and if you want some free Dots pretzels, because if you review the show and you let us know that you did it, then I will send you some free Dots pretzels, and they are the greatest pretzels in all the land, and they will make you smile big, happy smiles. But without further ado, you guys, it is Yoan Moncada Day. It's like we already talked about this on a different podcast. We're going to talk about it again. Because we have more time to talk about it now. It's Yoan Moncada Day. Hey!
Hey!
You guys own him anywhere?
Nope.
No, I do not, actually.
Well, I guess I'm the most excited of us then, because I do own him. I've been stashing him in a Fantrax Dynasty League that I own. I don't even remember how I acquired him, to be perfectly honest. But I've had him for a number of years now, so it is exciting. However, it is a points league, and I will say that I'm less excited about him in a points league than I would be in a roto league, because his biggest commodity, I feel like, this year is going to be stolen bases. I don't know if you guys feel like he's going to perform elsewhere. I feel like the power might come a little bit, and you know, the walks have been there in the minor leagues, 14% walk rate, but we do have strikeouts as a negative, like a -1 or -0.5, I don't even remember, but he's got a 28% strikeout rate in the minor leagues, and that is a detriment for sure in points leagues. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Is he going to be a difference maker the rest of the way?
I'll start here. Well, difference maker is an interesting phrase, because for the White Sox, there is no difference to be made. I mean, they're kind of out of it. But in a fantasy league, obviously, you know, you don't know what you can get here, and there's potential. Obviously, he's going to be a really good player, but the strikeout rate kind of concerns me. And I know we've just watched Aaron Judge strike out 800% of the time and have the best you know, season we've ever seen in history. But I still just don't believe that in its entirety. And I don't think Moncada is really going to reach that level yet. It may be a little while. But he's in a great position with the White Sox in that they have nothing to lose. So let's see what we can get. Bring him up and let him go. I mean, I agree with your sentiment that the stolen bases is probably going to be your most likely value getter here, but I do think he'll hit some home runs, and maybe the counting stats will be okay. It's he does walk, so maybe he'll score some runs. It just depends on where he hits in the lineup and how well he initially hits. I think there's a broad range of success that he could have. I'm not going to bank on it being a really good success, but I do think there's plenty of potential here for him to help a fantasy team this year.
Yeah, to me, it's one of the coolest things about playing fantasy baseball is when you have that prospect that you've traded for, you've drafted, and you feel awesome about, they finally do get called up. It's pretty exciting to see them finally get up to the major league level. I think I agree with the steals are probably going to be the biggest asset that he's going to provide to your fantasy lineup. I think maybe he could get you 10 to 12 homers possibly, but the K rate is kind of high, so I'd like to see that come down a little bit. You know, when you look at the sample size he had last year when he got called up for the Red Sox, you know, his K rate was 60%. Now, granted, he only had 20 play appearances, so we don't need to get real crazy with that, but hopefully that's not what we see when we come up, him pressing and trying to make an impact. And I hope that he, you know, kind of like Van said, there's not really a whole lot that they're going to be doing this year, so I'm hoping that the pressure will be a little bit less for him and he can understand that he can come up and kind of get acclimated to the bigs and kind of ease into the role. But, you know, you want to play those guys because you hang on to them for so long. That's why you draft the prospects, because you want to put him in there. And so I think he'll help you a little bit. I think, you know, if he's eligible at second and can give you a little bit, you know, a few steals from there, a little bit of pop. But I don't think 10 homers, and I don't know, maybe, what do you guys think? Maybe 15 steals, 20 steals? Do you think he could get more than that?
You mean in full season or just the rest of the year?
Just what he's going to get the rest of the year. Do you think he'd get that many?
I think he could hit 15. I don't necessarily know that that's going to happen, because that's still a lot considering we have less than half the season. But I think if at his best, sure, I think that's possible.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair number. And I think, honestly, that is a difference maker, because there's not a lot of players that are stealing that many bases in our game these days. Because, like I said, you know, with the strikeout rate, that's going to bring down the batting average, sure. But he does make really hard contact quite a bit, so I think that's going to make up for it. Maybe he could be one of those guys that has a sustained high BABIP, you know, above average BABIP, and especially with the speed, too. So, you know, I think you'll get maybe 250 batting average with a fair bit of power and be potentially a difference maker. Like you said, 15, 20 stolen bases the rest of the way. So he's definitely a guy that needs to be owned in all formats for the time being, at least speculatively. You know, if he starts off like he did in his September call up with Boston last year, obviously you can cut bait pretty quickly in shallow leagues. But I think in deeper leagues, he has been probably stashed all year anyway, and you might as well hold on to him and just hope for the best at this point.
And he smells like peppermint.
And I think too, real quick, if he can keep the walk rate up when he comes up, you know, in the bigs, he'll be a little bit more valuable in OBP leagues as well as a little more so than average leagues.
That's true, and hopefully that will put him up towards the top of the lineup, because today in his debut, he is hitting sixth. And so if he doesn't draw walks, then he's definitely going to continue to stay at the bottom half of the order.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'll say too is it's important, and this is what I look for when I'm looking at a prospect, first and foremost, is do they walk if they're a hitter? I don't like low walk guys. Hunter Renfroe has his value because he has a lot of power, but he kills you in so many other categories. And obviously I'm not comparing Moncada and Hunter Renfroe, but that's just kind of an example. Now, we've learned that guys can strike out and succeed. We've seen Judge do it this year. Mike Trout strikes out over 20% of the time, but he also walks and hits the ball well. So that, to me, with Moncada, whatever, shows me that when he struggles, he's still going to provide value because he's probably going to get on base. And that's why he's an exciting prospect for me, is because he does walk at an insanely good rate. The strikeouts suck, but if he can kind of temper those down and continue walking as he is, I mean, we've got an elite level player on our hands here.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. Number one on a lot of prospect lists. Not all of them, by the way. Ronald Acuna coming up on a lot of lists. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's move on. We've had a lot of action. Welcome to Tradesville. That is this section. We've got Jose Quintana, who has traded the Cubs for Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease. Van, you want to cover this in a more redraft oriented format than the Fantrax format that we just sure. took the dynasty slant towards a few minutes ago?
Yeah, and I mean, baseball-wise, this is fine for both teams. The White Sox get a couple of prospects. The Cubs get a really good player in Jose Quintana, who's proven. So I really like it for the Cubs more so than the White Sox, but I do like this trade for both teams. As if you've listened to the other podcast, you heard that I'm not as high on Eloy Jimenez as a lot of people. He is young, so there's plenty of time to improve. But he has like a 30-grade hit tool, and he hasn't stolen a base this season in 47 games. He can take a walk, so like I said, that provides some optimism. But he's also not a great fielder. So to me, this you're basically just looking at a lot of power. And in this day and age and culture of baseball, that's not as valuable as it used to be. Like maybe he can come up, you know, in a couple of years, it's not going to happen soon, and be a Cody Bellinger type who just hits a ton of power and hits for an okay average but doesn't do a whole lot else. But that's, to me, his ceiling. I don't see him as being a Moncada-type, all-around amazing player. I just think the potential's limited. So I know I'm kind of in the minority for this, but I do like I like him, just not as well as a lot of people. And then Dylan Cease, I don't care for in a redraft league at all for a couple of years.
Yeah, with Eloy, I will say, like, sorry to butt in, Ron, but I just...
No, you're fine.
He's upset.
To rebuttal, yeah, that's a good point with you know, and a point that I've made myself as far as the current climate that we're in, where everybody's hitting dongs and getting on base, right? So that is a good point, but still, I think that when you have this kind of elite power, and I just don't give a crap about defense, and I don't give a crap about speed with a player like this. I just want the guy to hit the ball a long way.
And you know, and
I think he's going to be really good at that.
A point to make too about defense is. I mean, obviously, we don't care about defense because it doesn't count in fantasy, but what it does count for is playing time. So if he's a horrible defender, then maybe he gets switched out and loses an at-bat, you know, several times a year in a different game. Maybe they start a really good defender on certain days that they're facing a really good pitcher. So that kind of is how you have to play defense in, just for people out there who are curious. You can't necessarily live and die by that because it's just a crazy way to do it. But if you're comparing A and B, and A and B are so close, but A is a horrible defender, I'm going to take B just for that reason, playing time alone.
Well, yeah, sure. But I think that his hit tool and his power is going to be to the point where I'm not going to compare him directly to David Ortiz, but like if you have a guy like that who's just that powerful offensively, just stick him at DH and, like, you know, just let him hit. Mm-hmm. You know, so that in that case, when your hit tool is that good, then or power, I guess, like you said, the hit tool is coming along, but when you got a guy who's just that good of a hitter, then I'm not too worried about them replacing him.
Well, you're wrong, so moving on. I'm kidding, of course. I mean, you're still wrong, but...
He wasn't kidding about that part.
No, of course not.
I'm going to look at it a little bit from the Quintana and the Chicago Cubs side of it, and I think we're getting to a point with the Cubs where they don't have to rely as heavily on the prospects that they bring up. I mean, sure, these teams want to get the most they can out of the prospects they bring up, and they'd like to eventually benefit from them at the major league level, but if they can flip them and get something that they need around the deadline, I think the Cubs are kind of at that point, because I don't think they're going to have any issues spending money and attracting free agents when they need to. So I think they can afford to get rid of some of these guys that rank high up, because a lot of the top prospects that they've had, like we talk about Chris Bryant, we talk about Javier Baez, they're already up with the big club. And Quintana has really come on in the past few weeks. I mean, when you look at, he had a start May 30th against Boston where he got lit up for 7 runs, and since then the earned runs, he's given up 3 or less in every start since then. Now the thing I don't like about it is there's a few outings that are only 4 1/3, 5 1/3, where the pitch count's kind of high. So that's something I'd like to see come down. But if you own him, you got to like that he got traded to the Cubs, because he was pitching well. But you're going to see a few more wins as well, because he's going to have a better offense behind him. So I think, like Vance said, I think it benefits both teams for what they're going for. The White Sox are going for an obvious total rebuild, and the Cubs are trying to go for it and load up once again, because they're still rumored to be going out and looking at guys like Justin Verlander and Sonny Gray. So I think for the Cubs, it makes a lot of sense. And if they can get the Quintana that they got in the first start, it definitely looks like it's well worth it, giving up what they gave up.
Yeah, and I am one who has said before that I've had Jose Quintana in multiple leagues. So I've been hanging on to him. I haven't sold him anywhere. I think that he's going to be rounding into form over the second half. I think he's going to be a lot better. The move to National League is really nice. And so I'm glad that I stuck through the bad times with him, and I think that his owners will be rewarded. I don't necessarily think that he's going to be striking out 13 guys a game by any means. I think that was pretty much just a really nice matchup with a very aggressive offense. Quintana notoriously sort of lives out of the zone a little bit, so when he can get chases like that, I wrote him up after his game. I think he had like something like 32% swing, whiffs on his curveball that game, something like that. It's just ludicrous. So nice to see that. Makes you feel good. Also, I got him in my NL only league when he transferred leagues. So sweet life me. I own him in yet another league. If Jose Quintana needs Tommy John surgery, you're going to see me visibly weeping on the streets. Anyway, moving on, we had Ryan Madsen and Sean Doolittle from the Oakland A's as their early sellers. They got dealt to the Nats for Jesus Luzardo, Sheldon News, and Blake Treinen. So we covered the prospects on the Fantrax Dynasty podcast. So, Ron, what do you think about this situation in Washington now? I guess we saw perhaps a first glimpse with Sean Doolittle getting the first save last night. But who do you think? Is it going to be Doolittle the rest of the way, or you think they're going to mix and match? What's going on in Washington?
I think, first of all, that we've talked about Washington's bullpen, I think, almost every week, and how we've gotten to a point where we're just kind of tired of talking about them until they actually do something, and they actually went out, and I think they fixed, or at least are well on their way to fixing a serious need. And I don't necessarily feel like they gave up a whole heck of a lot to get the two guys that they got. I think with the two of them, because they both have closing experience, they both have saves under their belt, I think it's going to be kind of a mixed match deal with them. I don't know if there's any one clear cut guy. I mean, me personally, I think I like Madsen a little bit more in that role. But nonetheless, I don't think that at this point, unless one of them just starts to really implode, that you see really either one clear cut have the job. The thing is too, I don't think that they're done retooling the bullpen. I think that they might go out and try to get one more piece for that, because really that's about the only weakness that they have. But it was a definite glaring weakness, especially when you have frontline starters like Max Scherzer, like Steven Strasburg, that are having the seasons that they're having. Gio Gonzalez is having a nice season, and you hand it over to your bullpen and they end up blowing it for you. So overall, I think they're going to maybe go out and get one or two more pieces, but I don't know if there's really a clear-cut guy. But I'm a little surprised that it's not Madsen, but it doesn't really, it's not something that I think is all out shocking that they went with Sean Doolittle to get that first save.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, that first save had some lefties involved, so I think that's kind of why they went with Doolittle. I think Madsen's the better pitcher. So I mean, usually I'm going to say the better pitcher doesn't necessarily need to be the closer, but I think he should be, just because Doolittle is left-handed, so he can be a little more of a matchup play. I mean, they're both really good pitchers, and I like this for the Washington Nationals for sure. I just think with Dusty Baker, who knows what's running through that guy's head? I have no idea, and we're not going to know until after the fact. It's going to be hindsight, so it's kind of hard to speculate with a nut job kind of in that capacity. But I'm with you, Ron. I like Madsen. I think he should be the guy, but who knows? Both might end up getting saves. They might do kind of a Andrew Miller, Cody, whatever his name is, thing. Why can I think of his name? Cody Allen. With the Indians. So there's a lot of potential things going on here, and if you're trying to scrape up some saves, it might be worth it just to have both guys, to be honest.
I would definitely be owning both guys if you're chasing saves in any kind of deeper league. I would tip my hand sort of towards Madsen. It would almost surprise me a little bit if they are going with the committee, because that seems awfully progressive for a guy like Dusty Baker, but you never know. So just to hedge my bets, I would definitely be using a roster spot on both of those guys. If I had to lean one way, like I said, it would be Madsen. So we shall see. JD Martinez has been sent to the Diamondbacks for Dowell Lugo, Sergio Alcantara, who I believe was the producer of Van's old podcast, and Jose King.
There he is. Yeah.
So, Van, let's start with you on this one. JD Martinez, value up, down, or the same going to Arizona?
Oh, did you ask me? I wasn't listening.
I did. You're too busy dreaming about Sergio.
A little bit, yeah. I miss Sergio. He lives in the closet, but occasionally we throw him a bone. Martinez to Arizona. It's a good deal for the Diamondbacks, that's for sure. Not all that pretty for the Tigers. I don't know. I can't even remember the Tigers GM is now. It's not. It's Al Avila. Is that right?
Yeah, it's Avila. Yeah.
Well, he sure butchered this. I mean, I said it on the other podcast. The Diamondbacks must have been so upset that they got screwed so hard in the Shelby Miller trade that they felt they had to do it to someone else, and they did. So they kind of gave up a couple of guys, not even good prospects, just pieces to the Tigers, who need really good pieces. They don't need just junk. So I don't know. It seems like a weird one. I think – I don't know. I'd consider Joel Lugo probably the top guy in the deal. I don't know about you guys, but he's a low-power, no-speed guy who can't walk. Alcantara is like a 20-year-old hitting in high A, 21-year-old hitting in high A with similar flaws.
I tell you what, though, Dowell can hang a hell of a towel.
He can, yeah. Or he's also a great rod that you could put to, I don't know, I'm not a carpenter. I whatever.
Great for drapes and curtains.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. So, yeah, I like it for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I'm looking at, which, by the way, J.D. Martinez, we alluded to this a little bit earlier, got hit in the hand tonight. And I just saw the x-rays were negative, so he is day-to-day right now. So that's kind of a huge sigh of relief for J.D. Martinez owners. That said, I don't understand, if you're Detroit, why you don't wait out until closer to the deadline and get a better deal. I don't really understand, especially with the minors that they have. When you look through the guys that they have there, it's not impressive at all. And I don't remember a time when the Detroit – farm system was really all that exciting in recent memory. So it's curious to me is why they did this now instead of waiting so closer to the deadline to see what they could get. Obviously great for the Diamondbacks. It's great for their offense. It's great for Paul Goldschmidt. I think it might take a little bit of pressure off him as long as, and it all boils down to his health. I mean, like we said tonight, he already got hit in the hand by a pitch, and that's nothing that he can really control, but that's always a big knock against him, but it's a great move for the Diamondbacks. And obviously, I think it's just a rental for the season. I don't think he gets re-signed, but they gave up essentially nothing to get a impact bat. And I don't know how many times teams are going to be able to go out and do that. It's not something that happens every day.
Yeah, tremendous deal for the Diamondbacks, and that gives them a much-needed lefty masher in that lineup. They've been really weak against lefties so far this year. And I'm interested to see – I mean, poor Paul Spohr, he's a noted Tigers fan, and he was defending the trade initially. I need to check back on his Twitter timeline. He was definitely playing full apologist for the Tigers, saying, oh, you know, it's he's just a rental and trademark. Market for outfielders low and everything, but to get a return like this, which is like maybe one fringe fourth outfielder for JD freaking Martinez, even if he is a rental, like that's pretty gross. Which, as a Twins fan, obviously being in the same division makes me happy. But anyway, value up as long as his hand is okay. Love him in that lineup. Love him in that ballpark. Value through the roof. Honestly, as far as dynasty outfielders go, he's in my top 10 for sure. Without even doing listings rankings, any listings or rankings, either way, he's in my top 10 for outfielders. Absolutely love him. Own him in a ton of leagues. So I'm stoked to see what he can do over the second half. But yet more trade action, folks. Ye ol' Yanks dealt Blake Rutherford, Ian Clarkin, and Tito Polo, our favorite named prospect, to the White Sox for Todd Frazier and Tommy Canley.
And the Ron, Admiral.
Yes, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, I'm just so freaking bitter about that. I didn't even want to include that. Good Lord. All right. So you can rib me about that if you want, fan. But first, who closes in Chicago, Ron?
Good question. My guy was all season Nate Jones until he is out for the year. So
Has he ever pitched?
He pitched pretty decent last. Was it 2 years ago at the very end of the season? Because that's where kind of I got on board with him. And he was hurt off and on last year, if I remember right. And then – or no, he was out, I think, the majority of the first part. And he came back. And, you know, he's the guy that's always talked about being the closer and waiting when they get rid of Robertson. Well, they finally did it, and he's out. So I don't know. I mean, maybe Tyler Clippard is the guy that – because they got him back with the prospect haul that they got. That would be my guess right now. But I don't know, like, once again, I don't know if it's a situation I want any real part of when I look at what they're going to be throwing out in the bullpen. And the intriguing part to this to me is when I look at what the Yankees are doing as far as the bullpen. When you look at what they have in the bullpen, I think that I read something today where they have, I want to say, like 5 or 6 guys in the bullpen with strikeout rates upwards of 40%. Which is pretty amazing. And I also read a theory, and I got to give credit to Ken Rosenthal. I read this morning where, you know, he thought that they might be building up, you know, kind of a super bullpen to compensate for the starting pitching. We're going to talk about, you know, Pineda here in a little bit. They might flip somebody like Betances for a starter. And you look at what they got for Andrew Miller, which worked out for both sides because Andrew Miller was a key part of the World Series run, but also they got Clint Frazier and a couple other prospects back. So it makes me wonder what the Yankees are have up their sleeve, because there's still a lot of time left to get a deal done if they want to bring in a starter, if they want to move a guy like Betances, because I think he's on a 1-year deal as well. So they're going to have to pay him again at the end of the season. So
yeah, that went well last time.
Yeah. So nonetheless, I think that they might be looking for a starter to flip one of those guys, and I think if one of them does get flipped, Betances is the one. But when you look at what they're going to be throwing out there in the 6th, 7th, 8th inning, I mean, it's almost unfair if they don't make a move. And it would compensate, it'd shorten the game a little bit, and it would compensate for that lack of starting pitching. But they're going to either have to rely on some unproven minor league talent, or they're going to have to go get somebody. So I think it's kind of an interesting thing with the, you know, it'd be interesting to see what the Yankees do. But they added an impact bat. They added, you know, Canley. They added Robertson, who's got closer experience. So overall, I think it's a solid deal for the Yanks, and it really helps them, you know, because that division's pretty tight right now. And I think that's, you know, we'll see what the other teams decide to do, because I think it was interesting that all day yesterday it was Red Sox, Red Sox, Red Sox, and then all of a sudden the Yankees end up making the deal for him. So it'll be interesting to see what the Red Sox do as far as kind of a retaliation move if they go out and get anything as well.
And kind of that point, you know, the Yankees getting the Todd Father himself, that basically means that the Red Sox can't get him. I mean, so that's also a move that's positive in that regard. I like what they're doing. I think once they finally, kind of the Steinbrenner stepped away a little bit and told Cashman to do what he needs to do, he's really been able to build some good teams. So I like what he's doing. One good point I want to make about the closing situation in Chicago, you mentioned Clippard, which I also read that supposedly he will be closing. I think Swarzak probably gets a shot. Mm-hmm. He's been so good. I mean, I know he's been hit a little bit lately, but that's another guy that if you can provide some, build up some value, either Clippard or Swarzak can net a bit of a return. Clippard's been pretty bad this year, so I'm kind of out on him. So either of those guys could take that job, I think.
Yeah, they say Clippard's going to be the guy to start off with, but I just I don't even think I'm going to pick him up in any leagues, to be perfectly honest. Like you said, he's been so bad. Granted, he's got a ton of strikeouts, 10.4 K per nine so far, but a 4.95 ERA, that's just going to lend you to another bunch of blown saves. I mean, if you're the type who is, maybe if you're a sadomasochist, if you like Fernando Rodney, like if he's your number one closer target in every league, if you like Jim Johnson, that kind of stuff, go ahead, pick up Tyler Clippard and see how it treats you if you're into that sort of thing. But yeah, I picked up Swarzak in a bunch of leagues, so I'm hoping that it's not Clippard's job for long. Maybe he'll lose his glasses and, I don't know, walk even more than 4.04 batters per nine. But, yeah, so I guess we should go to, what about Todd Frazier? Value up going to the Yankees?
You know, it's as far as park factors go, I think it's probably close to even, because whatever they name the White Sox Stadium now is it's a pretty good place to
super
hit.
Super awesome, great deal ballpark.
I think. Is it that one? Yeah, awesome bargain stadium or whatever. Yeah,
Dollar That's Tree it, Park. Yeah. I think it's Dollar Tree Park.
Dollar Tree Park,
but BOGO Stadium, something like that.
So I think his value gets a bump mostly because he's going to be playing in a better lineup, but that also means that maybe he sits a little more. I don't necessarily know if he plays every day. I think he's going to probably play quite a bit of first base for them. A lot of people are saying third base over Headley, but I don't know about that. I think put Frazier in first.
Well, they've got nobody at first base anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, so I like it for him. I mean, he's going to do what he does. He walks a decent amount, and he hits for power, and occasionally steals a base. He's going to keep doing that.
And I think there's something to be said, too, about when a guy goes from – a team like the White Sox that are clearly going to rebuild, and they're clearly not going to be winning when you're there, to going to a team that's in it. I think that there's something to be said about that too, because I think that's going to maybe re-energize a player to you're playing baseball for a living, so I don't know how you could necessarily be down on your job. But when you go from the situation he was in Chicago to the situation he's in New York, that's got to add, put a little bit of a spring in your step, and you got to be a little bit happier going to the ballpark every day too. So I think that could contribute, and you could see a little bit of an uptick in what he does as well. Now, is he a guy that I'm real excited to go out and add and one in my lineup? You kind of mentioned the deal with Tyler Clifford. Well, it's kind of the same thing with Frazier. You know, you're going to get home runs, but you're also going to get a 210, 220 average, and I don't want to deal with that either. So I don't think I'm going to go get him.
Yeah, definitely one of those guys that's a lot better in on-base leagues, which is what I play in, and that's why I love Todd Frazier. But I do like the point that you made, Ron, quite a bit about potentially dealing Betances for a starter. I think that he could net a pretty solid starter by himself just because he's such an elite reliever, and we saw that there's obviously quite a bit of friction between him and the front office there in New York. So I wouldn't be too surprised to see that. Maybe not even this year, but I think at some point in the offseason at least, it wouldn't shock me to see him be moved. And that bullpen is just ludicrous. But let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll come back with some other breaking news. She's up all night till the sun. I'm up all night to get some.
She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get nasty.
You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
All right, we have returned on the Nastiest of Casts, and we are now playing Welcome to Ouchville, which is going to be nothing but injury talk, because that is basically the year of 2017. You can check my Twitter timeline if you want to see my reaction to Carlos Correa being out for 6 to 8 weeks with a torn thumb ligament. It was not fun. I only own him in one league, but it is the BGFS Dynasty Classic, where I'm rapidly climbing the standings. I'm all the way up to sixth place after being like last or almost last for the first half of the season. So let's find a shortstop replacement, I guess, if we can. Anybody? Ron, let's start off with you. Do you have anybody in mind?
Yeah, a couple guys that I got that I was really kind of shocked with the ownership percentage. The first one was Orlando Arcia in Milwaukee, and hitting .282, been really good since he got called back up. 8 steals, 9 home runs. I think he ate some old guy's nachos the other day or something like that when he made a catch, and that's always
ice cream.
There you go. That was pretty cool. But he's only 29% owned, so he's a guy you can go out and get in the third leagues. And if you play in a really deep league, and he may not be an everyday guy, but the numbers are decent so far. Johan Carmago, and he's got an awesome name too. He's no Tito Polo, but it's still a pretty nice name. He's hitting .328. He's got a homer, 14 RBIs. He's only 5% owned, so in just about every league he's going to be out there. And he's a guy that you can kind of throw in there as maybe a streamer and kind of ride the hot hand and then kind of go on to the next one. But those are the two main ones I had. But I was still a little surprised that RC is only 29% owned in Yahoo leagues with what he's doing.
Yeah, that's
in a good
crazy
lineup.
I had him on my list. He's got some speed. In fact, he stole 3 bases in a game a couple days ago, so definitely some value to be had there. You know, Paul DeJong of the Cardinals has gotten a bit of playing time, and he's hitting well. I don't know that he's the answer to your problem, but if you're in a deep league, this is a guy you could look at. He's currently hitting .295, .312, .577. More power than I ever would have guessed out of this guy. 10 homers and 150-plus plate appearances. So there's something to look at there. I don't necessarily know how long this continues or if it continues, but if you're desperate, take a look at him. And then, of course, King DDD himself, DD Gregorius of the New York Yankees, is I think, did we talk about him last week? I think we did. Ron, you mentioned him, and
I had him as a second half MVP.
That's what it was. Yeah, and I agree. I mean, he still has kind of low ownership numbers for what he's doing. I mean, he's got 12 homers and almost 300 plate appearances. The slash line's good, .291, .318, .469. You're not going to get Carlos Correa numbers out of him, but you're going to get something that will help your team. And I think if he's out there, that's probably crazy and you should own him. So he's probably not available in a lot of leagues, but if he is, definitely snatch him up, because that could be a big help to offset the damage that's been done with losing arguably the best shortstop in the game right now.
What was the name of that last guy, Ben?
King DDD. Have I never said that? Do you guys know who that is or what that is?
Nope.
Okay, so are you familiar with the video game character Kirby, the little pink puffball from the Nintendo games?
Of course.
His villain is this big fat penguin named King DDD. And so it's been an inside joke amongst friends and I that D.D. Gregorius is named King DDD. It's not a good joke, but it's a joke nonetheless.
I like it. Now I'm going to be thinking about that every time. You know, one thing that we're good at is assigning nicknames to players, I feel like, on this show.
That's true.
Even if they suck, like the Italian Pumpernickel. I don't know what the hell happened to Joe Biagini. God, he sucks.
Oh, he's awful.
But, I think he'll be back. I don't know what happened to him. I got a deep dive into him. Maybe I'll buy low in my 24-team score sheet league. But anyway, shortstops. Let me go ahead and recommend Ahmed Rosario, who's tearing it up with Mets. Oh, wait, no. Still haven't called him up. Instead, let me go ahead and recommend Jose Reyes, who has actually been decent lately. Believe it or not, he's got 1,094 OPS in July.
Wow.
And he's running into form. Two home runs and a stolen base over the last couple weeks. So perhaps he's rounding a corner. So in deeper leagues, you can look at him. And then, who's the other guy? Jordy Mercer, the Warhammer.
Ooh, there you go. He's had a good year.
He has been. He's been weirdly good this year. So over the last couple weeks, he's actually, you're not looking at a ton of production here. I guess he doesn't have any home runs or steals, but he's at least a regular, and he's getting on base at a really good clip and driving in some runs.
He does have a little bit of power. It's kind of down based on his previous outputs that he... In his best years, his output was higher. We'll say that. But he can net you some statistics. And like you said, he walks a lot.
Yeah, and I feel like you almost slipped up and said points there. But I, if you are in a points league, then there you go.
So maybe that's what I meant to do.
We'll just say that. We'll go with that.
Who plays points leagues, by the way? I'm going to get off on a bit of a tangent here. I loathe points leagues. I can't stand
it. So with you, and somehow over the last couple of years, I've been playing somehow so many points leagues, and I'm slowly cutting them out. I've got the one league, like I said, that I've got Yoan Moncada in. That's my last points league, and I am getting out of it this year. If anybody else from that league is listening, I'm sorry. That's my first dynasty league. That is the only reason that I'm still in it, because I loathe that league. It pisses me off to no end. Head-to-head points league is just... so pitching heavy, and I've got like 27 guys on disabled list. It drives me nuts.
When I first started playing fantasy baseball in probably the early to mid 2000s, CBS Sports was the website I was on. I think it was called CBSSportsLine.com. Anyway, points leagues. I would play head-to-head points leagues, and all you had to do to win those leagues, and these were free leagues. This is before I paid. All you had to do is draft like 7 closers, because that's how you'd win. And I would. Every year, I just look at the top closer list. And this is back when teams would never change a closer. Like, if they named a guy to be their closer at the beginning of the year, unless they got hurt, that's your guy, no matter how bad he is. So that was how you did it. And once I finally backed away from that and got into some roto leagues, I haven't looked back.
I don't think I've played for about almost 20 years, and I don't think I've ever played any points league. I think I might have been head-to-head or roto. Mainly head-to-head from the start, and then I've gotten into roto the more I've gotten into it, you know, the last 5-10 years. But I don't think I've played in one, to be honest with you.
I shouldn't say a lot. Some people start with that just because of the parallels with fantasy football as far as the head-to-head format.
Sure.
And, like, you know, we've talked to Joe Pisapia a number of times on this show, and he really likes the points because it's sort of a more all-encompassing way to encapsulate what a player is good at. You know, like, if he actually has good play discipline, then he will be better in points leagues than he will be just in roto leagues. But if you do OBP leagues, which is what I prefer to do, then that counts in the walks anyway.
Right.
I just freaking hate it. So I'm totally with you. So moving along here, more bad news. Michael Pineda is out for the rest of the season and probably most of next year too, because he's having Tommy John surgery. Along with everybody else in the world. So where do the innings go for the Yankees, Van?
Well, I think if you're a fantasy player and you owned Michael Pineda, you might not be all that upset that he's having Tommy John. He's had kind of an off year. A guy that has had a ton of potential but never really seems to live up to it. It's too bad. I mean, I'm unhappy a guy anytime they ever have Tommy John surgery. But, you know, anyway. So I think there's a couple names they'll throw out there. The airplane himself, Luis Cessa. There's another nickname for us because, you know, Cessna and all that. Anyway.
Yeah, I like it.
He could fill some innings. I don't
know. That's just the airplane either. The airplane himself.
The airplane himself. That's the full nickname. Okay. I'll do that. I'll do that. He could fill some innings, and he's not that good. I wouldn't really rely on him in a fantasy league unless you're desperate. Chance Adams is their big prospect. They're not quite ready to bring him up, but if this gets too much, if it gets any more worse than it could be, then I think they finally take a look at him. The trade guys, the names that are kind of bandied out there are Sonny Gray or even Garrett Cole. That's obviously going to take a bit of a haul for both of those guys. On a lesser scale, I could see them going after maybe like a Jaime Garcia of the Braves or even a Jeremy Hellickson of the Phillies. Like, those are two guys who aren't quite as good but could eat some innings. So I don't think you're going to see an ace come to New York, but there's some potential for them to pick up a guy like this or maybe even move for a triple-A piece that they can use for some innings.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with that. I think it's going to be a guy that's just going to be able to kind of be a stopgap. Even if they do give up, like I alluded to earlier, they give up a reliever like Betances, that bullpen is still going to be stacked, and they're still going to be able to get to that, you know, that pin a little earlier than they would want to. You mentioned Chance Adams, and he's looked nice at AAA, so it could be a possibility they might just try to go in-house and bring somebody up. Another guy they have at AA, which we alluded to this earlier, and they could actually do this, Nate. They could call up Justice Sheffield, so they could have Judge and Justice actually in the lineup. It's not David Justice, but it could still happen. He's like I said, he's a Double A. He's currently on the DL. I haven't seen how long that's going to be for, but I don't really think they. I mean, he's 21, so it's not like he's an 18-year-old Double A prospect, and he's looked decent at Double A. Not a big strikeout guy, but they're not going to get a frontline guy. I mean, they could. I mean, it could happen, but I doubt it. I think it's going to be just somebody to kind of get them to that bullpen and get to those arms that they have in the later innings that can get them through.
Yeah, I agree. If I'm stashing anybody, it's going to be Chance Adams. We'll see if they're bringing him up.
You nice, take a really chance nice on prospect. Chance?
Oh boy, there it is. I would.
Oh, no. So that means that, what is that song by that horrible pop group from the 70s? Maybe they were alluding to Chance Adam 30 years ago because the song is take a chance on me. So they said Chance twice. Mm-hmm. They knew. They're from the future.
Do you think Chance's middle name is Chance also?
Chance Adams? It could be. Why not? Parents are weird now.
They sure are.
What have you named your kids?
Apple.
North.
Crustacean.
North and Northwest.
Yes.
The Obliterator.
That's ABBA, by the way, Van. That's an actual ABBA song.
That's what it is. I did not know that. No. Fernando.
Oh, mercy. What are you going to name your kids, Van, when you have them inevitably?
Oh, I have an answer for this, and you're going to love it. And I actually brought this up in like my freshman year of college.
Please let it be Burrito.
No, it's not quite. It's good, though. Somebody asked this question, and I thought about it briefly.
King so DDD.
There's two parts to it. The first name is, of course, Zap. The second name is Cosmo. Zap, of course, comes from one of my favorite movies of all time, The Final Sacrifice. And Cosmo, of course, comes from Cosmo Kramer of Seinfeld. Zap Cosmo Lee. That's great.
Rousedower. Oh, man. We were just talking about him. That's awesome.
We were, yeah.
Rousedower, please put out my hair. I was going to also mention, also RIP Joe Ross, because he is also having the Tommy John surgery, although I don't think anything is really actionable there, unless you're the weird type who is going to start Edwin Jackson. Either of you guys starting Edwin Jackson?
Never.
I didn't think so. Austin Hedges and Stephen Vogt are both hitting the DL. Austin Hedges with a concussion and Stephen Vogt out a month plus with an MCL sprain. So, Ron, do you have any recommended catcher replacements, or are you just sort of drying a warm bath and slitting your wrists?
Well, I mean, if you're counting on Austin Hedges and Stephen Vogt, and you're heavily relying on them to that point where you would consider the warm bath option, I think that your season's pretty much done anyway.
Dude, I tell you what, in my NL only two catcher league, I was rolling with Devin Mesoraco and Austin Hedges. And guess how that's going right now?
Not well.
Yeah.
So the reference you made is a little bit, it's a little closer to home than for.
Oh, it's not only that. Like half of my team also had Johnny Cueto hit the DL this week, Steven Piscotty. I could go on and on. Like half my team in my NL league is on the DL, and there's just nobody.
Well, I gotta say quick side story about Stephen Vogt that is really cool is my oldest son, who's going to be 14 this year. We went to a Miracle game when the Stone Crabs were there, when Stephen Vogt was still in the organization. And one of the coolest moments I've ever had with my son at a game is we sat right next to the dugout, and right after the game, Stephen Vogt came over and gave my son his bat. Nice. And so yeah, wow. Awesome. So cool, and it's like the centerpiece of our game room. If you can, it's kind of in behind the shelf with all the bobbleheads on it. But it's a story that my son and I still talk about today, and just really cool, really awesome. And I actually tweeted him about it last season, and he actually tweeted me back. So it was really cool. Really seemed like a really awesome guy. But the look on my son's face was amazing. So when you have kids, you know, it's always cool to see your kids happy like that. So that's one of the cool baseball moments that my son and I have, thanks to Stephen Vogt. But anyway,
speaking of which, thanks for the sweet baseball swag.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you the story behind that. Van, did you get your swag from me yet?
I don't know. I haven't checked my mail yet, so perhaps.
Okay, I'm just going to say that the Pokey Reese bobblehead is going to have a friend.
Yes. Now.
So you'll be stoked when you see it. But I'll tell you the story behind that stuff later on. My catcher replacements, real quick. I just went through with Stephen Vogt, a guy that I was rolling with in my 19 teamer before Vogt got hooked up with the Brewers, was Manny Pena. And he was putting up some decent numbers. He's kind of slumped a little bit lately, but he's going to kind of be the starter, I guess, by default. He's only 7% owned. And I just went real quickly with ownership percentage, because when you're looking at catchers off waivers, you're not going to find – you're basically trying to find guys that aren't going to kill you. And so Tyler Flowers is still 20% owned. He's a guy you could throw in there. Beef Wellington Castillo is a guy that's about 47% owned, and he's in a – pretty decent lineup in Baltimore, so he's a guy you could possibly get in a more shallow league. But when you're looking at catchers, especially at this point in the year, there's not much you can do. Yeah, and almost in some formats, you might be better off going without one just so they're not killing you in average and on base.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I can agree with that. I kind of looked at a couple. Wilson Ramos is only 41% owned. I think this is per Yahoo, so that's pretty low for me. I think I know he's coming off the injury, but he's got a good bat. Tyler Flowers is also still only 24% owned. We've mentioned him several times on this podcast in the past. I think even the Nate Miller episodes, we talked about him at length. He's only 24% owned, has some power. Robinson Chirinos just keeps chugging along, hitting home runs. He's only 4% owned. So I think there's some possibility here to pick up at least power if you're trying to fill in the hole. I don't think you're really – okay, let's look at it this way. If you just lost Austin Hedges, any of these guys could probably perform better than Austin Hedges. So I think there's plenty of at least opportunities out there to find something that'll work for you.
Yeah, the one other guy that I will bring up is Francisco Cervelli, who I believe recently came off the disabled list. He's had a pretty uneven year, but recently he has been hitting pretty well. Actually, a .432 on base over the last couple weeks and a couple home runs, which is uncharacteristic of him. And the direct replacement in San Diego is Hector Sanchez, and he'll at least get you a little bit of power, but probably a batting average that will tank your team. In my NL-only league, however, we're looking at Kurt Suzuki, AJ Ellis, Austin Barnes, Chris Herman. Oh, my God. You. What am I doing? These are going to be two of my two catchers.
Do you think, by the way, if Hector Sanchez were to provide some really good value for your team, that you could refer to his home runs as Hector Nectar?
Absolutely.
Good. Glad to know that.
I think they need to start marketing some sort of sugary drink at their concessions now, named
that. A snow cone or something?
That'd yeah, there. Yeah, there you go. Yes.
Hector Nectar, baby.
Who came up with the idea of a snow cone? Who's like, here, I have a bundle of lice. Let's just pour some sugar on that. That'll be fine.
I'll be honest. I've got sensitive teeth, and snow cones are like the opposite of what I am interested in.
Oh, they're so good, though. If you get a good snow cone, I like it.
All right, we're going to round out the show with one sort of little bullpen piece, and then we're done. What do you guys think is going on in Texas? Because we've got Alex Claudio, who has notched some saves recently. Jose Leclerc is still kind of kicking around. Do you guys have any kind of read on, you know, what's going on? Are you just holding on to Keo Nikela? Who are you trying to roster there, if anybody?
I think it's Kayla's job when he comes back, just because of how iffy they've been. A week or two ago, I have said it, I believed it would be Leclerc, but they just haven't shown any interest in making him be the closer. Alex Claudio, come on. Like, who wants that to happen? Nobody.
Right.
So I do think Kayla gets the job when he comes back, if he can prove that he's healthy, but I don't know when that's going to be. So in the meantime, you're kind of playing with fire with these guys. I'll still say Leclerc probably gets a couple of shots here and there, and maybe there's a chance he can run with the job, but he's still walking too many. I don't know. It's a gross situation, and it's hard to really want to have anything to do with it unless you're absolutely desperate for something.
I think in dynasty formats, Leclerc's the guy, but I think in yearly, I'm looking at Keon Keela. But, you know, I look at their bullpen depth chart. It looks to me like they lead the league in former closers that they have no confidence in, or guys that have saves they have no confidence in. They have Matt Bush, Jeremy Jeffries, Jason Grilley, and they don't want any of those guys to take the job, and they're not seizing the opportunity. So it's for me, Leclerc long-term, but I think Keela this season. And if Keela ends up being the guy and can take over the role and stay healthy, then maybe he's your long-term answer. But I still think of as far as stuff, I like Leclerc the best, but Van hit it right on the head. He's got to quit walking, guys, and once that goes away, I'd feel a little more confident in him.
Right on. All right. Well, we're going to get quite a few more trades, I think, by this time next week. I guess we could touch on the St. Louis bullpen, too. I know we didn't prefer this or anything, but it looks like maybe Rosenthal is going to be the guy to own there moving forward. We had Brett Cecil pitch the ninth inning very poorly the other day. He came in for a save opportunity and blew it. They seem to be pretty sick of Seung-Hwan Oh, so I think, well, Van, you're down in that neck of the woods. Do you have any extra insight on that from, you know, the best fan base in the world, the St. Louis Cardinals?
That's cute. Yeah. Cecil does not need to close. He's never been able to do it. And in fact, right after that game, my friend Justin, who is a Cardinals fan, immediately sent me a message that said, Cecil equal closer equals terrible idea. And that's really how I feel about it. Rosenthal is the guy because he's the youngest and because he probably has the best stuff. He has his issues. He has a struggle with control, and he hasn't been that elite lately, but he's still the guy to go for. I completely agree with what you're saying. It may take a little bit to shake out because they're doing really weird stuff with the matchups, but I think he's the guy for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the only other guy that I've looked at a little bit's Matt Bowman, but even Matt Bowman I don't get that excited about. So I think just by default, because there's really nothing else there, it's got to be Rosenthal. So if you're going to speculate on somebody, or you can go get somebody, he's probably gone in most leagues because he is listed as the closer, but if you can get him, Rosenthal would be the guy I would get. But I'm not optimistic about anybody they have. Their situation to me is almost as bad as, or on the same level as Texas. Not something I want to get involved in either way.
Yeah, well, I'm a little more optimistic on Rosenthal, I think, than anybody except for, yeah, maybe Kayla in Texas, just because he hasn't had a chance to suck. He's been on the disabled list. So. But I think Rosenthal has made a bit of an adjustment, and his last, oh, God, I don't know how many appearances, 6 appearances have been completely clean with just a boatload of strikeouts. And so hopefully he's turned a corner. He's going back to not only the Rosenthal that he was before, but a closer version of him, of his previous self. So I've tried to handcuff him everywhere I can. I have him nowhere because everybody that I play with is really sharp. And that's the kind of leagues that you should all play in. But that's going to cut it for this week. So, Ron, you got anything to plug going on this week?
On Deck Circle, we're gonna kind of shift the focus of the On Deck Circle to Dynasty guys that you might want to look at as far as going into 2018, because at this point, with trades going on and with, you know, teams in and out of it, it's getting a little more difficult to predict players that are going to give you some solid contributions. So we're going to shift it a little bit to guys that I want you to have on your radar for the the 2018 season in your rookie drafts and your dynasty drafts. So we're going to look at that still over at Fantastics. And as we plugged earlier, you know, check us out at Fantrax now, and check out everybody at Fantrax, because like I said on the other podcast, it's a pretty solid lineup with some pretty heavy hitters over there as far as from a fantasy perspective. And I think the cool thing about the Fantrax stuff is there's a little bit of everything. I mean, we have dynasty, we have DFS, there's a hockey podcast, there's Dave Kerr and Nate Miller doing the Fantrax Fantasy Hour, where they're touching on everything. There's some NBA in there. There's something for everything that you do. So check
soccer
it out.
Even, I think I saw.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, it's all on there. So, yeah, definitely. And check me out on Twitter, The Real Made, as always. You know, so overall, a little bit of the same. Real quick, I want to throw my minor league team of the week out there. And I'm kind of going down the direction of, you know, I'm a history teacher, so I'm going to throw out the Lowell Spinners that are in the Red Sox system real quick, and that's kind of an ode to the Lowell Mills, textile mills that popped up during the Industrial Revolution, where a lot of immigrants came over and worked in the textile mills. So I appreciate that little historical tribute there, the historical nerd coming out of me a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
I did not remember to do a minor league team, so I'm just going to say Hartford Yard Goats, because that's just great.
Well, I remember to do mine about 15 seconds ago, so don't feel bad.
Nice. Good job. You can find my work, of course, at BigGuyFantasySports.com. I do the Hold or Fold column weekly, telling you whether or not you should keep playing that player or trade him and so on and so forth. You can also find my website, BootuInc.com. That's BootuInc.com. And on Twitter, at ManlyVanLee. I will be doing a lot of work this week. We're drafting up some new legislature at Fun City to determine if we can make fried foods taste better, or make the fragrances of bowling balls smell better. So I've got a pretty busy week ahead of me, but feel free to shoot me a tweet. What's your favorite bowling ball scent?
Very good. All right. And folks, I did a special guest appearance earlier this week on the Bench with Bubba podcast. If you check out my Twitter at Nathan Duck, and I linked to it from there, we talked about some Game of Thrones, talked about some fantasy baseball. It was a good old time, and I always love talking to him. So go check that out. And everything else, as usual, Fantastics, Insider Baseball, Fantrax, the Dynasty podcast that we do now. Everything starts with fan. This is very confusing. I'm just going to log off and go drink a bunch of beer because it's fun. So until next week, ladies and gentlemen, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.